proclaiming the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. This is the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. We continue today the teaching by our guest speaker, Brother Howard Rothenberg, who is a Jewish believer who serves with us at IBJM in South Florida. Brother Rothenberg shared a fascinating series on the Jewish people at the 2013 four-day focus that was held here at IBJM. We now continue with his message.
Moses had a burden for his people, and that burden came from the Lord who looked on his people. You know, when you have the same burden as the Lord, you're really close to the Lord. That's pretty close. He had that burden. He had to make a decision. And it's very interesting, all these people, there's a lot, you know, Jewish people say, and this phrase is constantly repeated, I was born a Jew, and I'll die a Jew. I was born a Jew, and I'll die a Jew. I'm going to explain that phrase in more detail, and really what it implies. But basically, you're not born without choices. You are born with a choice. Moses was born a Jew, but he had to choose to be with God. The faith is chosen. You may be born a Jew, but the faith is chosen. And that's why God outlines these figures so carefully. Because he's showing the nation of Israel, you don't get to be fulfilled by being born a Jew. You've got to make a choice for God. And Moses had to make a choice between the palace and the people. Between God's plan for him and living in a palace. And he made that choice. Just like Abraham, just like Isaac, and just like Jacob. Every Jew has to individually make a choice. So when he says, I'm born a Jew, or die, that is irrelevant. You know what's relevant? His choice for God. That's very relevant. Because that faith is what completes him as a Jew, not his birth. So again, he makes this choice. And he goes to his people, and guess what? They don't want him. They reject him. Well, who does that sound like? That's Christ, isn't it? Because the second time, they're going to want him. The first time he comes, they reject him. And the second time he approaches them, they want him. Now, what happened in that 40-year period when he's in Midian, learning the contours of the desert? Well, Jewish people start to pray. Look at chapter 2 and look at what it says. It's fascinating, this. First, chapter 2, verse 23, it came to pass, in the process of time, the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage, and they cried, and their cry came up unto God. And you notice it says the process of time? That means the 400 years had passed. It's time. It's ready. They're ready to go. And so they're crying unto God. You see, there's a time for Israel to pray to God. There's a time in the future when the nation of Israel will go to God and pray. It's going to happen in time. That's why it says the process of time. God does everything at a particular time. And so they're praying, and now Moses is ready also. He's grown up. He's learned. He's 80 years of age. He's been humbled. And he's going to go to the Jews, and they're going to accept him. He's in the backside of the desert. He's with his flock. He's a shepherd. And now he's going to be called to a bigger shepherd's job. He's going to be called. And he's been with sheep for 40 years. What kind of a man is Moses? He's a humble man. Was he that way? No, he learned to be that way. But the outstanding quality about Moses is that he's meek. He's the meekest man on the face of the earth, according to his own writings. And what was Jesus? Meek and lowly in heart. Moses is being shaped according to the character of Christ. Wow. Moses rejected privilege and power to go to his people, to become like them. So did Jesus. And so in Moses, you have a fascinating portrait of this figure, right, who gives up everything he knows to be a leader, to accept God's call. And he goes to a bush, and who does he see? The angel of the Lord in the bush, speaking to him, calling to him out of the bush. And again, you have another picture here. Interesting. He says, the bush burnt with fire, and the bush was not consumed in chapter 3. Well, how does that work? People don't actually think there's a hell, but there's a fire that burns, right? And there's people that can burn in it and somehow not be consumed, because that bush was not consumed. God can make a bush that's not consumed. He can make a fire that continues to go. And that bush, and here's God dwelling in a bush. What does that show about God's character? A common, ordinary bush. That's where God meets Moses. And we build elaborate buildings. We admire the architecture, right? Europe is filled with cathedrals. I'm sure the Lowe's will tell you that, right? Beautiful buildings. And God dwells in a bush. God meets Moses in a bush. What does that show you about God? He's a humble God, isn't he? He has no pride. This is a God without pride. We don't even understand that. His son was born in a stable, and he dwells in a bush. And that's where he meets Moses. And he calls to Moses, and Moses answers the call. And the first thing Moses says, when God gives him that commission, he says, who am I? What a change, isn't it? The first time, he was brash. He ran to deliver the Jews. He was eager. The second time, he says, who am I? And the answer to that is going to be God's name. I am that I am. Moses says, who I am, and God says, I am that I am. I'm the ever-present one. I'm the self-existent one. Your mission is dependent on me, not on you. He had to learn that. That took him 40 years to learn it. So he sends him, right? He sends him out. He gives him a number of signs, very interesting signs. One of them is a stick turning his rod into a snake, and then the snake into a rod again. We remember that. He did that at the palace. And what he's saying basically is, you've got control over Satan. You got control over Egypt. I'm giving you power. See, he's got a power that he didn't have the first time. He used his military might the first time. The second time, he's going to use God's might. And he's going to win. He's going to win. And that, and Israel realizes that it's the rod of God. And interesting, it was the rod of Moses, and then you read, it becomes the rod of God. Well, how did it become from the rod of Moses to the rod of God? Because Moses gave it to him. Anything you give to God becomes God's. And he'll make it powerful. If you give your voice, your legs, your heart, whatever it is, he's going to make it useful. He's going to make it powerful. So here's Moses. He says, they're not going to believe me. And he does all these signs. And then Moses says, I can't speak. It's one of the last objections he gives. He gives numbers of objections. I'm not eloquent. I'm a stutterer. Whatever it is he had, I can't speak. And God says, I'll provide somebody for you, Aaron. So now he's got a prophet who's going to introduce him. Well, what did Jesus have? A prophet called John who introduced him. And so again, you see this matchup between Moses' life and Jesus' life. Because Aaron will introduce Moses to the congregation, just the way John introduced Jesus to Israel. Same thing. Again, history. It's all history in a kernel, right? Being pictured for you. Now here's Moses. He goes into Egypt with his wife. He sets her on a donkey. He takes the rod of God in his hand. And he's going to say something to Pharaoh. His opening statement, let my son go. Who does he call Israel? He calls Israel his firstborn son. What is Jesus? His firstborn son. So Israel is the son of God in this paragraph. In chapter 4, verse 22, Exodus 4, verse 22, Israel's my firstborn son. He's my heir, in other words. So is Jesus. Israel and Jesus. Moses and Jesus. Isn't it interesting? These people have a match up and show you Jesus. All you have to do is study it. Study Genesis. Study Exodus. See, give it to a Jew. Show them that. These pictures are there. They're really, you know, they're very concrete. The one thing he doesn't do is circumcise his kid. His wife becomes the moil. That's embarrassing. They're not supposed to do that. She's not supposed to do that. He didn't do it. We don't know why he doesn't mention that, but it shows him to be a rather timid person with his wife. And she's angry with him. And you know, God was willing to kill Moses if he didn't circumcise his kid. He was willing to slay him. That's why she did it. She had to circumcise him. That's how important circumcision is. It's so significant. And that's why the Jews make such an issue of it when Jesus comes. They call themselves the circumcised, all right? But it's a sign of the covenant, and Moses was overlooking that. So he goes to the people. They accept him. They bow their heads. They worship. He goes to Pharaoh, and 10 times he says, let my people go. 10 times he makes that request. And each time, Pharaoh says no. And each time, more miracles are done. So again, God's using Pharaoh. God put Pharaoh there. He could have put anybody there. He could have put a cooperative Pharaoh, right? Somebody who says, go, take him. I don't need him anymore. You can take him out and they can become a great nation. And then there wouldn't be any miracles, would there? There wouldn't be a Passover. Because all those no's are going to lead to the final, the climax, right? The Passover. Now, in order to be a son, to be an heir, right? You got to belong to God. And so God has to take a slave people and make them his son. And how does he do that? Anybody have an answer? How does he take a bunch of slaves who really are not, slaves don't inherit anything, and say, they are my sons, right, and they're going to inherit? How does that have to, what has to happen for them to do that, to become in that position? Same thing that had to happen to us. He has to redeem them. He's got to buy them back out of bondage, and that's the picture of salvation. That's what Passover is, basically. I'm going to go into that when I do the Passover, but basically, he says, take a lamb, right? Remember this day. And he tells Moses, they're going to know that I'm the Lord, their Goel, their Redeemer. And that word Goel means a brother, somebody, a flesh and blood brother who pays your way out of bondage. And so God is saying to Moses, basically, I'm going to become their flesh and blood Redeemer. And guess what? That's exactly what Christ did, isn't it? He became a flesh and blood redeemer. Because that Goel runs through Isaiah, it runs through Genesis, and that's why God sends his son to appear as a man so many times. Because he wants you to know he's going to come in the flesh, he's going to be in a body, and he's going to redeem you with that body. Just like Genesis. He's going to be buried and rise again. He's going to die for your sins. It's the gospel constantly being developed in these books. So Moses asks, Pharaoh denies it, and God does some plagues on Egypt. And what God is trying to do is destroy the gods of Egypt. Not Egypt, but the gods of Egypt. He's trying to remove that idolatry. And what happens in Egypt is a model for the future. Because someday in the future, God's going to do miracles as he did in Egypt. That's the tribulation period. You know, it says in Genesis 1, I put the stars in the heaven and the sun and the moon for signs and seasons. That means at some point those stars are going to be used for signs. You know when he's going to use them? In the tribulation. Then they're going to be signs and also seasons. They're for a calendar. So look at Exodus chapter 12. The last request that Moses makes. And it's turned down. Exodus 12 verse 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months. Now, months means moons. It's the beginning of your lunar cycle. When was that calendar set up? In Genesis chapter 1, when he gave the moon and the stars for lights and for seasons. A season is an appointed time. It means moedim. It's a meeting time between God and man. And what happens on Passover? God meets man through Jesus. That's what happens. Jesus enters time, enters life, and God meets man, right, the Jewish people, on Passover, the first season, the first meeting point between God and man. So he says, this will be the beginning. This is a season that I want you to know about, right? Take a lamb, and it begins with a lamb. And your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. And you'll keep it unto the 14th day of the month, and all Israel will kill it, singular, and you're going to eat it with bitter herbs, and roasted with the fire, and matzah. And that unleavened bread, he spends 22 verses on the unleavened bread. Because that is a separate feast, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And all those feasts refer to events in the future. Because he says it's a sign. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. That's the famous line that people, even Jews, remember that. Again, it's redemption. And God wants them to remember that redemption. By blood. It's always by blood. And Pharaoh releases them. Every firstborn son dies. In Egypt, every son that's under the blood doesn't die, including Egyptians who took refuge under that blood. So they leave Egypt. And the first command he gives after that is separate the firstborn. Now I bought them back. In other words, I purchased Israel, and when you sanctify, when you dedicate the firstborn to me, that's a picture. Well, what is the ceremony that the Jews do today? Pidyon Haben. Buying back of the firstborn. They do it. Religious Jews still do it. And they'll give a dollar or a half a shekel, I'm not sure the money amount, or half a dollar to a coin, and it's always to a priest, derivative of the priest, and they'll give the baby and then buy back the baby, the firstborn male, as a memorial to the Exodus. Isn't that amazing? And they do it. They still do it. And again, God's drilling it into their minds. You are my firstborn sons. I bought you out of Egypt. Well, what is Christ? Firstborn son. Firstborn son. Again, you have this picture. So they cross the Red Sea, and Pharaoh goes after them. Now, what's interesting is who's in the cloud, all right? Who's in the cloud? Look at chapter 14, and look at verse 19. And the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them, and the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. Wow. Yeah, look at verse 24. It came to pass that in the morning watch, the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud. Who was in the cloud? The angel of the Lord. Who's looking out from the cloud? God. You notice? God is identified with the angel of the Lord. And often enough, the angel of the Lord appears in a cloud. He appears in a cloud when they build the sanctuary over the mercy seat. That's where Moses met with him.
You have been listening to a special program of the Everlasting Nation broadcast presented by Howard Rothenberg during the 2013 four-day focus held at IBJM. For more information, contact us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Join us next time as we continue our series. Until then, may God bless and shalom.